by 2050, an estimated one-third of the world's population is likely to be living in urban slums without basic services like electricity, running water, and trash disposal. The people living in those communities are often the hardest hit by things like climate change and economic downturns. Our next guest spent 7 years following two women and their families in the Nicaraguan city of Managua. Their stories are the basis of his new book that aims to put a face on the poverty that millions of people live with every day. Douglas Haynes is an associate professor of English at UW Oshkosh. He's the author of Every Day We Live is the Future, Surviving in a City of Disasters. Douglas, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, before we meet the families you followed in Managua, let's follow you. What led you, a guy from Wisconsin, to Managua to visit this slum?
Right. So I am a writer, a nonfiction writer, and do what's called literary journalism. And I try to tell stories of big global issues, particularly environmental justice issues, from the bottom up. So telling those stories from looking at people's firsthand experiences. And I had been reporting in Latin America over a number of years, lived in Guatemala for a while in 2004, and had the opportunity to go back with students to Nicaragua in 2008, and connected with a nonprofit organization there that was hosting me and my students. And that's where I met Diane and Yadira in this community, the Widows, or Las Viudas, in Managua, where this organization that I was partnering with works.
And listening here in Wisconsin, we might think of a neighborhood in Nicaragua as very far, very distant. So a theme that comes up through your book is there are a lot of threads that tie the United States to this place and others like it around the world.
Absolutely. So historically, Nicaragua's fate has very much over the last 150 years or so been intertwined with U.S. intervention in Nicaragua. Nicaragua was occupied by the U.S. Marines a couple of times in the early 20th century. And then, of course, more to affect the characters in this book, the Contra War during the 1980s had a big impact on people moving from the countryside into the city. And that's true in a number of places in Latin America and around the world, that political violence is one of the big forces that drives people in this massive global migration, what I would really call a revolution on the planet, from the countryside into the city. And so the Contra War sort of destabilized people's lives in the countryside to a great deal. And in fact, about 40% of Managua's population migrated to Managua in the 1980s and early 1990s.
But something as mundane as to us as the change in the price of fresh fruit means, oh, maybe I won't get that today at the supermarket. That means that one of the people you profile doesn't buy a necessity that night.
Absolutely. So one of the things, big stories that I try to tell in this book is the influence of disasters. And they don't have to be big disasters that get a lot of headlines in the media, but small disasters and the cumulative effects of small disasters. And one of those cumulative effects is food insecurity. And that affects people, particularly in urban areas, because they are so dependent, if they're living on the economic margins already, they are so dependent on having just enough money to buy just what they need to feed their families. So if you have something like a major drought, which happened over the past few years, or a lot of unusually intense rains that wipe out farmers' crops in the countryside, suddenly those prices go skyrocketing up and people can't buy the rice and beans that they need to feed their families. Or if you're a vendor, like Diane, one of the women I follow in this story, who's has a fruit and drink stand in a place called the Eastern Market or Mercado Oriental in Managua. She can't then buy enough of the fruit that she buys wholesale to sell at her stand without raising her prices. And if she's in this quandary, she raises her prices, then she can count on the fact of not selling more and her income takes a direct hit.
Well, let's zoom in closer now and meet Diane and Yadira. Tell us a little bit about them.
So Diane grew up in a very kind of a world apart from Managua, even though it was only about 20 miles away on the slope of a volcano, an active volcano. And her family wound up there directly as a result of the Contra War in the 1980s. They were being pushed around from place to place and got stuck there during the war. And they were just kind of scrapping to survive. And like a lot of rural people in that area, developed this connection with this growing marketplace in the city of Managua as the city grew. And her mother, Diane's mother, Carmen, started bringing firewood to the market. And she would go early in the morning, really the middle of the night, get a bus bus with a whole load of firewood, sell the firewood, and then come back home. But gradually, she started realizing this was too much, this process of going back and forth. And she met up with a wholesaler. And a lot of what happens with people when they get to the city is they just take advantage of personal connections that they make. And that's what she did. And this wholesaler convinced her, well, you could make a lot more money buying fruit in the middle of this massive market and selling it kind of on the outskirts where people are coming in and leaving. And to give you a sense of just how big this market is, I mean, it's grown massively and devoured all kinds of neighborhoods over the years. At this stage, it's about the size of 55 super Walmarts. So it's a huge, huge place that is Central America's biggest marketplace, commercial center, and has drawn people from the countryside from all over the country and actually draws people from all over Central America for commerce. So Diane followed eventually her mother to this market after third grade, when all of Carmen's children were big enough to help her out in the city in this fruit selling business. She brought them from the countryside into the city, and they were homeless for a number of years, just living on the streets of the market. This family kind of camped out under the awning of a pool hall every night until the market authorities saw them and gave them a spot to build a little shanty. And so Diane then herself got drawn into selling fruit and eventually set up her own fruit and drink stand with the help of a microloan, which she had access to through an organization that does microloans for single women, which is one way that can help really people, and particularly single women in this situation, start a business and create some kind of livelihood for themselves. So I look at her story, and then I look also at her neighbor Yadira's story. And Yadira comes from farther away, up near the Nicaraguan border with Honduras, deep in the mountains, where the Contra War really flared up in the 1980s and drove people directly out of the countryside into nearby cities. And a series of family crises pushed her then away from home there through a series of stops, finally winding up with her partner, Henry, in Managua, also squatting, being homeless, and trying to find and invent a way to make a living in this city. And that's part of the story I try to tell in the book, is really the amazing ingenuity that people like Diane and Yadira have in terms of making a living in what's often called the informal economy.
Talking to Douglas Haynes, a Wisconsin writer. His book is Every Day We Live is the Future, Surviving in a City of Disasters. Douglas, the word precarious comes to my head as I read through your book. No matter how entrepreneurial these two are, and they are, and resourceful, and they are, one little thing, a small disaster that we might not even see as a disaster, a disease, an abusive spouse or partner, so many things. There's so many little things. They're right on the edge of a personal disaster.
Absolutely. And that could be, an economic disaster for the family. It could be, as you mentioned, a health issue, both of which the families in this book have struggled with. And that's one of the reasons that drew me in part to telling their stories. They both have children who suffered very serious illnesses, and that contributed to their difficulties trying to get out of poverty, try to get out of that precariousness in their situation and trying to reinvent their lives in the city. But as you say, one of the things that's really important about this story is learning that, of course, this is not just about Diane and Yadira, but millions of people around the world who are susceptible, living on the margins economically and environmentally in the places where they live, who are susceptible to what I call the sum of small disasters. It could be an hours-long rain. I tell this story of a landslide that happened in Managua in 2014 that really was just an hours-long, really intense rain. But if you're living in the wrong place at the wrong time, below that slope that has been deforested or has a big wall built on it to build a middle-class subdivision, as was the case with this landslide, then you are in a tremendously precarious situation. And their stories, Diane's and Yadira's stories, really show that accumulation of small disasters, but also the intense vulnerability, whether it be through something like food insecurity or climate disasters. Nicaragua in Central America is one of the most vulnerable regions to climate change in the world. And as those climate disasters accelerate, people are facing even more and more precariousness.
Now, here in the U.S., if we think about someone in a, say, Central American slum, that we probably don't, but if we do, it's probably a statistic. X number of people died in this hurricane, mm-hmm. or so many people are suffering from a disease in this place, or whatever, a big number. Why was it important for you to focus in and put a face on some of the people that behind these numbers?
Well, like I said, since we often hear these stories, the headlines about hurricanes or disasters, or you might hear headlines about global urbanization. You know, it's forecast that by 2030, an area the size of South Africa will be covered by cities. So we're talking about a trend that's really resurfacing the planet. And we're talking about people, of course. A third of people, the UN projects, of humanity will be living in informal settlements or squatter communities by 2050 as urbanization progresses. So I think it's really, really important that we get beyond those numbers and really see what that means for people in their day-to-day lives, and not only the challenges that they confront and the ways that those challenges tell us about how well our societies and our economies are working or not working. I see them as kind of the barometers for the global economy, but also they preview for us trends and issues that more and more of us are going to be facing in the future as these trends of inequality and climate change and urbanization converge. And again, not just in the global South, but here in the United States too, as we saw this past fall in Houston with low-income communities really bearing the brunt of the hurricane there, or in Puerto Rico, for example. These are not faraway problems, and I think we have a lot to learn by looking at the lives of people who are already suffering from them, these problems, in the ways that they adapt and are resilient.
Douglas, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Douglas Haines is an associate professor of English at UW Oshkosh. He's the author of the book, Every Day We Live is the Future: Surviving in a City of Disasters.